Yeah, so a not-for-profit organisation just like the Space Association, specifically for high-power rocketry. I'll talk about that in a moment. And we're an organisation based on a very strict safety code, so we're quite responsible in how we operate. Everything we do is done completely legally. We have spent years negotiating with WorkSafe in Victoria to get appropriate permits with the Civil Aviation Safety Authority and the police, fire brigade and other authorities. And high-power rocketry specifically is for rockets that are generally over 1.5 kilograms and have greater than 62.5 grams of propellant. So most of you will have seen the little Estes rockets you can buy at hobby shops. A lot of you have played with those. They're great fun, and that's how I started and most members start. That's called low-power rocketry. High-power rocketry is for engines and rocket sizes that are bigger than that, and there's also a separate definition of amateur rocketry. But Tripoli sort of is high-power rocketry, and more so in America for amateur rocketry as well, where you're building larger rockets. So Tripoli as an organisation is a global organisation, although it originally was USA-centric. It was started in 1964 by some school kids, basically. It became a national association later on. In the late 90s, there were three prefectures established in other countries. One was in Germany, the UK, and there was Canada, and then Australia. So Australia is one of the first international prefectures. And the clubs that are geographically dispersed are called prefectures, and they're run by a guy called the prefect. It's just the terminology we use. Quite a powerful organisation. In 2011, they successfully sued the Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms in the United States, who had introduced regulations that were found to be the courts to be illegal. So it was quite an expensive lawsuit, and Tripoli Australia, as members of the global organisation, actually helped fund that lawsuit. So it was quite the BATF, as part of their anti-terrorism process, basically classed rocket motors as explosives. And technically, they don't explode, they deflagrate at a high speed. And explosives generally blow at velocities of greater than 2,000 metres a second, up to 8,000 to 10,000 metres a second. But rocket motors don't explode, they burn. And the basis, and the BATF didn't have the authority to introduce the laws they did in the United States, and also they introduced them without the appropriate consultation process it required under law. Why this was important to Tripoli Australia is that Australia tends to follow the US in lots of things to do with regulation and stuff like that, so it's quite an important lawsuit. So 4,500 members globally, and there is an Australian now, David Wilkins, who's actually on the board of directors of the Tripoli organisation globally, and he was the first non-US person to be elected to the board, and that's great for us. Now, Tripoli Australia was started by me back in the mid-90s. We started with three or four members, and we were flying effectively low-power rockets at Caulfield Racecourse. Now, some years earlier, there was a Melbourne Rocket Club that was also flying rockets. Angelo was there. Peter was there as well. What actually happened was I'd heard about them and went down to Caulfield Racecourse many weekends in a row to try and find them, and they'd stopped flying there years and years earlier, it turned out. So we used to crawl in through a back gate and sneak in and launch our rockets. And that's just a photo there of what we considered a really advanced rocket, which was 3D motors, if you know the motor classifications. So they were D motors, and now we fly O motors. And the motors, a B is twice the impulse of an A, essentially, and a C is twice a B, and you keep doubling it up, but very quickly you get to very high numbers when you get to M, N's and O's. So we had to go through a certification process. To actually start the prefecture, we needed somebody that was certified under Tripoli at what's called a certification level 2 level. So I had to actually go to a launch called Springfest 97 in America, and that was in a desert area between Las Vegas and the Hoover Dam, a place called Boulder in Nevada, and that was on my honeymoon. We'd been other places as well, including down the River Nile to that island. So, and just a bit of clarity too, myself and Carl are from Tripoli, Australia. So when we started Tripoli, there was no other Tripoli prefectures in the country. So we called ourselves Tripoli Australia, not knowing that we'd ever have any other people join that club, because there was other rocketry associations operating in Australia. But we're essentially now the Tripoli Victoria. And there's also a Tripoli in Queensland, Western Australia and New South Wales. But we've decided not to change the name just for historical reasons, despite the other states trying to apply some pressure to do that. Oh, and the other interesting photo, we had unfettered access to the Woomera Range for a couple of days in the late 90s, which you just couldn't get these days. Does anyone know the significance of LA-8 at Woomera? That's where RESAT was launched from. All that's left is a big concrete pad, a couple of railway tracks, and the Air Force used the launch bunker for demolition practice, blew it up, so it's a real shame. So I've talked about high-power rocketry. At our launches, we fly low-power rockets. We fly any rockets. We love to have fun. We love kids to come along. I mentioned it's a certification-based organisation, so there are three levels of certification and one written exam, and we're very strict. You know, if you don't pass the appropriate level, you can't move up to the next class of rocket, and we're quite rigid in that. And we have people leave because they don't want to follow the rules, and we're happy for that to happen. Uniquely, our launches are insured through the parent US organisation. I think our insurance policy is something like $80,000 a year. It's quite a difficult thing to get insurance for rocket launches, $80,000, something like that. Yeah, that's essentially why I started the club in Australia, was to get hold of their insurance. Yeah. And we insure the landowners' properties as well, because it's very hard to find landowners that want to let us use their properties. And to be in our club in Victoria and in any other Tripoli club in the world, you have to join the parent organisation. So you pay a membership fee to them and you pay a membership fee to us. But if you're a part of that parent organisation, you can come fly at our launches anyway.
What's the origin of that?
It's got to do with why the city of Tripoli was named, and parents of one of the original kids had served during the Second World War and something like that. There's no specific rocket connection. It was just a name. It's in America. It's two quite interesting things. They tend to have bigger rockets than we do, and they tend to have bigger stomachs than we do as well. So, and a lot of our members go to these launches. Clail's been a couple of times.
How high do your rockets go?
A few hundred to 100,000 feet. A few hundred feet to 100,000 feet. But generally in the 5 to 10,000 feet range.
Are your rockets guided?
No, it's illegal in Australia to have it. I think so in the US as well. Yeah, they rely on fin stabilisation and some spinning. Our policies require all rockets to have a recovery system on them.
Do you build your own engines?
We can't. We can't build our own solid. Most of these are solid propellant engines. We can't do that in Australia because it's the regulations. But some of us fly hybrid engines, the same as the Branson Spaceship Two, which burn nitrous oxide as an oxidizer and a plastic fuel grain. So that's called a hybrid motor. So a few of us have built those. One of the guys is really good at that. LDRS is Tripoli's annual major rocket launch year. LDRS stands for Large Dangerous Rocket Ships, what they call it. And then they've got another one called BALLS, which is more experimental amateur rocketry. Just going to briefly talk about our launch site, which is one of the real assets of our club. So we've got a permanent launch site up on the Loddon Valley Highway, up near a town called Serpentine, past Bendigo. And we've been flying out of there since about 1998. It's 2,000 hectares in its own right. We launch from smack bang in the centre of it. But the great thing about it is that it's open. It's cropped a lot of the time. There's few trees. Anyone that's flown rockets know that if you've got one tree in the paddock, your parachute will get tangled in the tree or a lake. So it's a great open area. And all these boundary fences, to all the other farmland, they've got gates that can be opened, and all the surrounding farm owners let us into their properties. So we've effectively got about 6,000 hectares to play with.
How far across is this farm?
Oh, I don't know, that'd be 1.5 k's, maybe 2 k's, yeah. I surveyed it, yeah. It's probably 2 kilometres from there to there. It's a long walk. If your rocket is over here, you know, it's an hour to go pick it up.
What is the maximum wind speed you can launch in?
8 knots. I think that's... Oh, the safety code is 8 knots. We make a judgment. Our biggest problem is this is the Loddon Valley Highway, so we make judgments on the day, essentially. We can't launch into cloud. We can launch below cloud, so it depends on cloud levels. So there's a gliding club nearby that we get their cloud information from them, but CASA won't allow us to fly through cloud. So we've got 25,000 feet waivers. Almost every launch we can fly to 25,000 feet, which the New South Wales Rocketry Association has 3,000 feet. So it's great, and we're in real time contact with the traffic control tower at Tullamarine. So for extra high waivers above 10,000 feet, we actually call in. They give us a window. We launch, and you can see jumbos, you know, going. They go around us when we're launching. It's quite good. Interesting thing is there's only two rocket ranges in Australia, Woomera and our launch site. It took 10 years to negotiate that with CASA, and David Wilkins took care of that. And we launch about six times a year.
Do you have any shelters or storage on site?
We've got a grain silo on site that the farmer lets us use. It's all locked up. So this is a guy called Glenn who was one of the original founders with me. He's actually a professional model maker. He does some really great stuff. That's his Magnum. Unfortunately, the first flight of this, a guy hit the wrong launch button and was supposed to launch the rocket next to it, and he hadn't armed his altimeters. And it flew beautifully, and then we had to pull it out of the ground with a pick and shovel. Another one of my rockets. This one's got video camera on board. 12, 13 years ago when I was doing all this, I would spend thousands of dollars on these payloads, amateur TV transmitters, all sorts of stuff. Now you get it on eBay for $25. You know, a USB recording camera, and you just duct tape it to the side of the rocket. But I don't do this sort of stuff now, but I used to make all my own avionics and stuff, an advanced system with GPS tracking, telemetry antennas down the bottom, power management systems, controlled four pyrotechnic interfaces for parachutes and things like that. So, you know, a lot of companies now make stuff, and you don't have to make your own stuff anymore. Oh yeah, had accelerometers, altimeters, dual accelerometers, in this case dual altimeters, real-time telemetry. So as the rocket's flying, graphs are showing altitude and acceleration and all your parameters, GPS information. And in Google Maps, you're on Google Maps, you can see the rocket travelling along Google Maps. So when you want to find it, you just look on the Google Map photo and say, oh, there it is over near the fence, and you walk over to it. They're pyrotechnic interfaces, that parachute release mechanism. And you get these sorts of things come up on your screens in real time. So as the rocket's flying, people are looking it up, and I'm usually looking at the laptop and looking for this bump here, and you know, this point here is where, for example, the parachute's deployed. And you know, we use radio direction finding. This is again one of my toys. This is a dual pyrotechnic cable cutter for releasing parachutes. So we machine up some interesting things and try and do NASA-like stuff in our backyard. Not all flights are successful, so that's just an example of a payload module. It's probably about that long, and it unusually stayed together, and we were able to attach wires to the microprocessor and get all the telemetry information out of it, which was good. So, you know, sometimes these things, we can't even dig them out of the ground because it's, you know, compacted clay, and you stand there with picks and shovels.
Do you often have failures?
Yeah, it's quite common. You know, Richard Branson said it the other day, this stuff's not easy, and they've got hundreds of engineers, and we've just got ourselves doing our own things in our garage, so it's very hard to get things to work perfectly.
What's the failure rate?
Oh, me personally, or look, I think probably one in five is have some sort of problem. Yeah, that's the good point. Little rockets are safe. Oh, the bigger rockets, you're talking thousands of dollars. Yeah, you might have parachute partially open and a hard landing and fin breaks off, or you might have a catastrophic recovery failure and it slams into the ground at terminal velocity. They're spectacular, you know. And this is an interesting rocket that's my son, and it had a casing problem, and the rocket sort of took off and started hovering as the case burnt through, and all the epoxy in the carbon fiber airframe, you know, caught on fire. It's a rare event. We don't talk about those sorts of things.
What are the regulations on guided rockets?
They're not guided. We aren't allowed to guide them. And it varies. New South Wales, for example, only introduced regulations around 2002 to make it illegal to build guided missiles in your backyard, for example. There isn't a lot of regulation around this stuff. You can fire parachutes and, yeah, but you can't guide it. Okay. Some people do experiment with it and have used sun guidance and a few things, but it's actually not very easy to do. That's why you have companies like Lockheed Martin and stuff, people doing this sort of stuff. Carl turned up one day with this, which he'd built in his backyard, well, in his factory, and I got the chance to have the first try of it with my Level 3 project. You remember that first Mercury flight where the Redstone's sitting there and the parachute pops off? I won't talk about this any further. But anyway, Carl got to use that for his Level 3 certification project. I've been in Tripoli for nearly 20 years. I haven't done my certification Level 3 yet because since that failure, I haven't been back. But this is Carl's Level 3. Carl here, his Level 3 rocket on the same launch trailer about a year later. And you can see we do scale up things. That was on an M motor. But it's a fantastic piece of equipment. We can just, you know, drag it out to the range. It's just a trailer, essentially, and it takes minutes to set up. It's fantastic. It really is. So that was, you know, a full Level 3 certification, and there's an initiation process when you get your Level 3, so you're branded. But it's a big deal, and it takes years to get, and a lot of expense and stuff along the way. So I thought that'd be a good introduction to Carl's talk. But is there any questions? Oh, finally, I want to say that we're always recruiting. So it's $40 a year for our local, to be a member of the local club, about $80 for Tripoli US to be a member. So, you know, we have a what we call our low power pad set up at close range, and the high power pads are set up further back, and we have kids and teenagers launching all the time. They don't have to be members. We just have a member sponsor them, and that just means they supervise them when they're out there. And we'll launch on some days 20 low power rockets. So it's for everyone. Anyone that wants to come along, if you've got some of those rockets in your garage, bring them along, and any of the members will sponsor you to fly them.
How does the weather affect you?
And we used to be lucky. We'd get 5 out of 6 launches away on the designated day a few years ago, but now the weather seems much more random, and we'll often postpone a launch on the Thursday night till the next weekend and stuff like that. It's just the nature of... unfortunately, the farmer that we'd been using his land for all those years went into receivership, and the bank foreclosed on his property, so there's a new guy renting it who might buy it, and he's become far more restrictive in terms of when we can fly. And in the past, the other farmer didn't mind if he had crops that were at a high level and things, but this guy's a lot more restrictive, so we're still wading our way through that. This is a very unique site, and we'd be very hard-pressed to find something like it, because, you know, I found this site, and it took me 2 years of travelling around Victoria, so if we lose this, it could be devastating. And you've got to be out of major flight routes, and there's so much stuff you've got to go through with CASA and stuff like that.